This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. In the 1970s, many American families gathered around the television to watch the show The Dukes of Hazzard. The action comedy spawned its own fashion craze, Daisy Duke shorts. In the 1980s, it was MTV that helped define the way a generation dressed and the music that they listened to. And remember how the TV show Friends sent women rushing to their stylists to get the Rachel haircut, the one with highlights? These marketing moments were all at a time when being an influencer was clear-cut. Movie stars and advertising companies helped shape trends and attitudes. The advent of social media has forced a paradigm shift. Now the influenced can become the influencers and even create their own brands. And this power isn't just bestowed upon people and the products. Also, pets, like Rambo the puppy. He is a native of the Triad, and People magazine called him someone to follow. Rambo, welcome to the State of Things.
I think he says thank you.
And that is the voice of his momager, Courtney. Welcome to the show, Courtney.
Thank you so much for having us.
So tell me what a pet influencer is. I know a social media influencer is someone who's gained credibility and they have a big following and they're able to use that following to make money through marketing products. What is a pet influencer?
Yeah, so essentially a pet influencer is pretty much the same thing, but the page or account is all about the pet. So people follow pet influencers because, I mean, let's be honest, pets are adorable. There's nothing better than watching cat videos or seeing adorable pictures of cute puppies. And pet influencers just have capitalized on that love for adorableness online. And voila, we have pet influencers.
So introduce us to Rambo for people who can't see him. He is actually in studio, sort of curled up on the chair underneath the mic. Describe Rambo to our listeners, both his personality and what he looks like.
Yeah, so he's pouting right now because he can't run around the studio and meet everyone, but he is a 12-pound Maltese Yorkie mix, and he's 6 years old, and he is just a huge extrovert. He loves people. He loves meeting people. He's constantly smiling, very happy, and so that personality comes across in his social content, and I think that's why, you know, he's gained such a following.
And he has very floppy ears and a cute and distinct face. You all can find photos of him at our website and on Instagram and Facebook. So his road to fame actually began during the John Edwards trial. Tell me that story.
Such a strange thing, right? So at the time, I brought him home at 11 weeks old. He was this little furry potato, essentially. He was tiny. And at the time, I was living near the courthouse where the John Edwards trial was taking place. And there were all these news crews out there. And I would walk him up and down the street and on the grass over there. And we ended up making a lot of really good friends with the people who were camped out waiting to hear, you know, what the verdict was. So at the end of the trial, everyone was packing up and they were just so upset that they had to leave Rambo because they came to love him so much. And I was like, oh, I'll just create a Facebook page for him. And it just kind of grew from there. So,
and at one point, you were gaining almost 4,000 followers a day.
Yeah, that was a ridiculous time. That was way before Facebook went public and before ads and were the name of the game, pay for play. We gained up to 330,000 followers. And yeah, it's kind of been a whirlwind since then.
What do you think it is about Rambo that makes him distinct? Anyone can put photos of their pet on Instagram or Facebook, but why has Rambo captured something?
That's a great question. So Rambo has a very unique storyline, and I've committed to several content pillars, as we call it in the marketing world. So his love for fashion, his passion for food, how much he loves to stay home and watch quote-unquote Muttflix or Netflix. those are all things that are reoccurring themes in his content. And I've also I've taught myself how to take pictures of him and taught myself about lighting, and that comes across in his content. So making him the star of his content is what I think really resonates with his audience. And yeah, great captions is another thing that you want to have when you're have a pet influencer, and that's just something that really resonates with his audience. So
being a pet influencer is ends up being your part-time job. Tell me about the money-making aspect of this. How exactly do you make money as a pet influencer?
Yeah, so it's definitely a part-time job. Sometimes it feels like a full-time job. But so brands will come to us and say, hey, we want to work with Rambo. Do you want to promote this product for us? And we'll evaluate the product and see if the brand is the type of brand that we want to be associated with. And if that's if that all checks out, we will pass along that inquiry to our pet influencer agency. So we have a manager that helps us field these inquiries, negotiate contracts and fees, and then they'll negotiate sponsored posts for that brand. I'll get a scope of work that tells me exactly what the creative guidelines are. We'll go ahead and create the content, write up the captions, send it to the brand, they approve it, and then we post. So essentially, it's kind of like word of mouth marketing, but on steroids.
And so you, on Rambo's Facebook page or Instagram, there is content that you're creating that is just, you know, sort of you and Rambo or Rambo hanging out at the house. And then there's some content that is this sponsored paid content.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we try not to post more than one sponsored post a month. Simply because we don't want to oversaturate our channels with, you know, ads everywhere. It's really important to us, well, to me, I guess to him too, but to be authentic and maintain that authentic feeling and not using his pages as a billboard to just, you know, make money.
So the authenticity factor is interesting to me because I imagine you are building a trust relationship with people who follow Rambo's account. So how do you decide what the products are that are a good fit, what the ones are that you really want to recommend to other people? Can you give me an example of a product that you have decided was a good fit and what that looked like, or just generally what your guidelines are?
Sure. Yeah. So we never promote a product that we haven't tried out ourselves before. I've been asked to many times, and like, why would I provide a testimonial through my dog's page, you know, through his voice saying, we love this product if I've never tried it? We do what I like to call background checks on brands. We like to make sure that there's not scandal surrounding the brand or, you know, that the product hasn't, you know, hurt dogs if it's a pet product or something like that. One of the brands that we have worked with in the past that just came to mind that was really awesome was Warby Parker. That was several years ago, but it's a non-pet brand, but definitely one that we like to be associated with. And they do a lot of good in the world. So it's kind of how we choose.
So if you flip through Rambo's feed, you do see him wearing glasses and sunglasses, various attire. Today he was donning a jean jacket over a onesie. I know you get his clothes, they're secondhand kids' clothes, but what is the process like of actually dressing him? I mean, is he comfortable with that? Do you ever feel uncomfortable with sort of making him into this object, this character?
No. So I he's dressed right now, but this is for a very formal event, of course. But he doesn't wear clothes unless we're shooting, you know, or, you know, taking videos or whatever. I never make him wear a button-up shirt just to walk around the park or anything like that. Whenever I do dress him up, I always give him treats, so it's a good experience for him. And if he doesn't like it or if he's just visibly uncomfortable, I take it off and, you know, we go do something else. Everything that I do is about him. And if he's not having a good time, I'm not having a good time. So that's kind of how we go about it.
How has taking photos of him and him being a source of your income changed your relationship to Rambo?
Oh, I think that our relationship is stronger. But to be honest with you, we're just, you know, normal otherwise. He's my best friend. He's my little buddy. And he goes everywhere with me. I think that the fact that I have the opportunity to share his cuteness and his personality with the world just makes it so much more awesome.
I was thinking a lot flipping through his feed yesterday about my own dog, Oliver, who I've talked about on the show, who has very distinct features. He has a beard and is really scruffy. And I did at one point buy him a hot dog Halloween costume and I dressed him in it. And I look back at that and I'm like, I feel a little bit crazy. Maybe I took it too far. And I know then I was looking up research and actually Americans are spending more than $60 billion on their creatures every year. So what do you think about this whole economy that's being created? I mean, have we taken it too far? Is this a good use of our money?
Of course it is. I mean, there are fur babies, especially, you know, millennials especially. We love our pets and they're our babies, you know, and there's no reason why we shouldn't be spending money on them. If we're spending money on them for ridiculous things like, oh, I don't even know. But if it's something that doesn't benefit the pet or make your relationship stronger, that's kind of, you know, I wouldn't say that that's something that you want to be doing. But the more we pamper them, they're only here with us for so long. The more we pamper them and have fun with them, the better their experience is with us. So
I want to bring in another guest to this conversation now to dig a little bit deeper into how social media influencers are changing the marketing world. Sridhar Balasubramanian is a distinguished scholar and professor of marketing at UNC's Kenan Flagler School of Business. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So you are sitting next to a dog, which is a rare event. I would love for you to talk a little bit about how pet influencers and influencers in general have changed marketing.
Yeah, so I had a very nice encounter with Rambo earlier, and he's one of the most friendly dogs I've ever come across, I'll tell you that. So marketing has changed a lot in the world of social media. But I would to synthesize everything together, I would say the main change is this. Historically, if you think about print advertising and then television advertising, all of that has been a monologue from the producer or the marketer to the customer. And then with the internet, it became a little more of a dialogue, a little more opportunity for the customer to speak back to the marketer. What is really different about social media is that marketing is now a conversation. It's a three-way conversation from the marketer to the customer, from the customer back to the marketer, and very importantly, from customers to each other. So it's a whole community that's out there to which you're now designing your marketing strategy to appeal to.
And the line seems so blurred to me now between what is an advertisement and what is creative editorial content. And I know the FTC has tried to put in place some regulations, but what are the challenges that social media poses in us being able to identify as consumers whether or not we are taking in branding content?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And indeed, that's one of the big challenging issues out there. You go to a popular online seller like Amazon.com. You look at all the reviews over there. How many of those reviews can you actually trust, right? And that's an open question. And the FTC has in recent times put in some rulemaking around that, whereby if you're going to be an influencer and you're going to speak on behalf of a brand, you are required to clearly communicate that you're being compensated by that brand. But that said, given the profusion of social media platforms out there, it's very hard to police this. You can't go after every instance of an influencer getting a message out there on behalf of a company and see whether the disclosure has been made, right? So it's a little bit of the Wild West out there right now. And there's a lot of self-policing to be done, right? What are the standards that you set for yourself in terms of clarity about your objectives and your incentives when you speak about a brand to customers?
Courtney, what are your standards? How do you self-police for transparency with your audience?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Like I said before, I never promote a brand that I don't believe in, but I always disclose whether or not I've been paid to promote the brand or whether I've received a free product, simply because if I didn't, some people would be suspicious. I mean, when you talk about a product on social media nowadays, people are like, oh, is that sponsored? Or, well, you didn't say it was sponsored. I need to keep that trust that we have with our audience alive. And in order to do that, I need to tell them, hey, I was paid to talk about this, but also you know that I would never promote anything that we didn't truly believe in.
How do you communicate that message? Do you say this is a sponsored post?
Yeah. So the FTC actually has guidelines for influencers. For social media posts, they have to include either the hashtag ad or sponsored. And depending on the channel that the post is published on, they also have to use the channel's sponsored post tools. So Facebook has a branded content tool that all influencers have to tag the partner brand with before they publish their content.
Okay, so there are some clear guidelines. I wonder, Sridhar, where this question of alignment between an influencer and a brand seems to be really important. Can you talk about this relationship and moments where it's gone really well and moments where it has maybe been a failure?
Yeah, so that's a very relevant point. I think that social media strategies work best when there is good alignment between the product that's being sold and the influencer and the community to which the product is being pitched. If that alignment is not there, then it just seems like something that's been put on like a Band-Aid and somebody's just trying to market something to the community. And that leads to a loss of credibility on the part of both the brand and the influencer. Part of making good influence work is authenticity. And there has to be a bond of trust between the community and the influencer. And the when you think about trust in the business context, it's all about reputation. It's about doing the right thing over and over and over again until people expect that you are going to do the right thing in the future. And that's when people begin to trust you. But you also have to manage the process of influence well. So in the recent past, Selena Gomez had this shot with Coca-Cola, beautifully framed, great lighting. And it seemed like she was really enjoying drinking the bottled Coca-Cola with the red and white straw. And the picture was just perfect. She looked like she was having fun. And it became one of the most circulated photographs on Instagram, right? And great success. In contrast, you had Scott Disick, who's a mid-range celebrity, let's say, most famous on account of his association with the Kardashians. And he put out this Instagram post for Booty, which is a weight loss supplement. And what he did was when he did the post, he put in all the instruction that he'd received from the company about what he was supposed to post out there.
He basically copied and pasted it.
Copied and pasted it into the ad and into the post. And if you do that, suddenly all the credibility that you tried to build up over time vanishes in an instant. And then people don't trust you anymore. And it's very hard in today's environment to build that credibility back up. So once you have a reputation, you got to protect it and keep reinforcing it and do your best not to lose it.
One of the things that strikes me about that is I was scrolling through and I remember when I saw the Selena Gomez Coca-Cola thing, hashtag ad is, or hashtag sponsored is one of many hashtags and it kind of gets lost in a sea of many other things. Courtney, for you, is that ever a concern that maybe someone is going to see a post and not recognize that this is actually something sponsored as compared to any other day in the life of Rambo?
Yeah, so in addition to requiring those hashtags, the FTC recently released additional guidelines stating that hashtag ad or sponsored can't be just one of many. It has to stick out. It has to be in the beginning of the post or within the first few sentences. And like I said, I never want to come across as if I'm being deceptive. So we make sure that we include that in there. And just, make our content really great. Some people think that including hashtag ad or sponsored will decrease the engagement of their content. But if your content's great to begin with, it will not have any impact on it.
So what can we look for in Rambo's journey moving forward? We've got 30 seconds.
Oh, I think a lot of traveling, for sure. A lot of traveling, a lot more partnerships with really cool brands, and just having a lot of fun living his little puppy life.
Wonderful. Well, Courtney and Rambo joining us in studio today from the Triad, and Sridhar Balasubramanian also joined us. He's a professor of marketing and a distinguished scholar at the UNC Kenan Flagler School of Business. Thank you all so much.
A pleasure.
Just ahead, we will learn about the power of journal writing. Please stay with us.